one of the original authors of the R2, and so he's lived with this thing and grew with it for many years now, probably over 10 years now, he's been slotted. So we're going to focus on the acting CEO. I'd also like to just announce that the cabinet has appointed a permanent chair of the RTMC, and that will be Mr. Richard of Hawaii. But John Johnson has been at the stalwart. He's led up at the RTMC through a very rocky period, and he will be with that permanent and will continue to serve with RTMC. So looking forward to him. Staying with him. The third member is Sia Wheeler. Sia is the senior manager of legal services, and she's here with a big black bag, like most of the legal people do. You know, they got these tank on wheels with all this. And she's just here to answer any questions or any queries on the legal side. The person I'll be talking to you today is Jeff Kuehr. Jeff is the senior manager of R2. His specific one is to lead and introduce R2, and he will take you through the presentation today. Let me say that a good introduction about R2. Probably most of you know, and I think the public will certainly know, that the points of merits whereby, and we'll go through that, but whereby if you commit an offence, you will get the merit points, which will add up, and eventually if you commit another offence, you will lose your license. But what I want to say is you mustn't be scared of this act. It is probably the most important contribution towards road safety in this country, other than the Federal Road Safety Act. So, it is going to change the behavior, it is going to lead to safer roads. Of course, it is there specifically to protect law-abiding citizens. And I think that is the key point that we need to know. Law-abiding citizens have nothing to fear from the alley. It is those citizens who continue to and habitually break the law and ignore the road safety measures that will be prosecuted in Florida. So I would very much like to, for your support, to implement the act, or then to discuss how we're going to implement the act. But it is an absolutely essential part, I think, of the future of road safety legislation. So with that then, Jeff, if I ask you to please take.
Right, before we do that, I'm sorry, I did warn you that I wasn't a protocol person. I said you wasn't a protocol person. I apologize for beginning to cover not to be chair of the board. But you briefly, without spending any extra time, getting up the sense of the delay or the
Okay. The report, in fact, the initial reporting makes for the financials, which are form key financials, what the 31st of May, and the RMC and our auditors listed out by financials did in fact submit financial report by that. But there's a number of queries within that report that the general had. Previously we had a qualified financial statement. And one of the things that we were trying very hard to do this year is maybe we'll give an unqualified financial report. So there were a number of things we had to correct, particularly in relation to the assets we've taken over from the RTMC. Because the RTMC took over the staff and gave us those weren't reflected in our financial statements to the auditor's satisfaction. So those were corrected. I think there were six items which the auditor general asked us to please correct. Those were corrected and resubmitted to the auditor general. Then there was a further thing, and I think one or two additional questions related to one appointment of the chief financial officer, which we haven't yet done because we are still in the process of appointing people. Also to do with the annual, the financial statements not be correctly written in previous year's capital assets. So the Auditor General was not satisfied. We're happy with our this year's financial report. was that because the previous year's financial report did not take the actions which were likely to be taken over directly, it will not be reflected in this year's annual reports. So we were expecting him to sign the qualified, unqualified audit, which got a draft of, we were expecting him to sign that on the 12th ticker, but because of the additional period, he did not sign. So unfortunately, we had to postpone the presentation.
Okay, thanks, Roger. Let me just take a few members wants to raise anything further on this matter, please. Okay.
Those six issues were corrected because of what the six issues were.
And you also were.
Have you got it on there? Thank you. If I can offer those, it's just a second. No, it's not. I wonder if I bought everything on today. I've only bought the one which is the latest one, which is where it is basically said that it is in place.
The issues that would have turned out really, the six issues, were particularly related to finances concerns. What transpired is when it came to the school building, we were actually paying service providers, staff, and everything else. Somebody had not just spoken. What we're doing here is that authorizing what should be paid and then being over to the Department of Transport to do the payment. So we got to become another system. And what we found out was that there were issues in the financial statements where it reflected that the Department of Transport is owing us money. I think he said 9 million, whereas the Department of Transport was owing us 7 million. And then that had to be corrected because the department didn't have their financial correction. It was corrected between us and the department of giving to the September. And then we had the issues on the payment itself, not reflecting the previous year's claim or whatever. Then we called in consultants to do appreciations on some of the things, and then we got that corrected. I thought the other issue. To the financial not reflecting the cash flow, there's an issue on the cash flow. Because we are paying through DOT, what we do is give you things to pay, and then when they claim from us, we finally claim the whole money from us. So we couldn't tell the amount that we them or they owe us. So that was corrected subsequently. So all the issues they raised, the issues, we actually corrected that and gave it to them, and then continued with their audit. To understand that they gave us a draft audit where they indicated CFO, which is still an issue for them. They indicated no bank reconciliations were done. They indicated shareholders committee did not meet four times. They indicated that there was no materiality framework. They also indicated that there was no monthly cash flow forecast that was done from the activity. So those were the issues that were still outstanding that we should have an impact.
Okay.
I'm trying to make sense of strategy. This is a company that is there. They don't have bank reconciliations or financial statements. The money cannot tell you what they are giving to the department. It means if they were paying for the money, they never had a balance sheet. And they don't even, they had to do, to ask consultants. Waiting for the auditor general to write to them, and then they get their work contractors to come and do the job for them. But even if they audition the real users and they wouldn't have cared that they did the position themselves in there. Take whatever that stage is. I'm trying to see what has been doing.
In the previous session, in the notes to the financial statements, appears that there was about 7 million rand with assets that the department has given you as part of the content agreement, and that is given to you at no cost.
Yes.
Now, are you saying that the department is wanting that to be given a value to such, which you don't have a value for, although it's said that it was worth 7.5 million? And then you were doing the course of your quite a year to appreciate that asset. But I mean, that's the problem I had, is that if it was transferred with no cost, it shouldn't be reflected as a cost in the course of my sponsors.
Okay, thank you, sir. Let me just answer the last. The reason that we put it as a note on the previous panel was particularly because we were giving it at no cost. No, I did hear. The Auditor General wants us to reflect it as assets. So that was where the problem lies. Yes, we did do this because of particular circumstances.
And you also appreciate
that. Yeah,
and the second issue.
By the way, sir, in the previous year, they accepted the Auditor General that we can do that. And this time they said, no, we can't do that. And then the question of that was asked by honourable member. The RCMC, since it has started, we know that we didn't have capacity, particularly in terms of payment, we use the systems of the department so that we shouldn't have problems where we don't know what's going on. And since last year, December, we have actually appointed people who are doing, who must do finance. And those people have to start doing the financials for those affairs, as we have to call in consultants to assist them and to do the stations and all those type of things, so that we can now start doing quarterly reports, monthly reports, quarterly reports, reconciliation, all those things that were raised in the previous year. We have to appoint people, and those people are not in those particular issues. Everything else relating to money was with the department. All we had to do was to check if the service was with us, and then we authorized the department through its own system to check that everything.
Barbara,
shall we, as I indicated, we have appointed people from our own bank account. We are paying from our own system. And we're not about to say that we've got staff in finance, and this is what we want.
Thank you. My question and my follow-up then back into that is, I think that there needs to be some amendment done quite quickly to the agreement, to arm them to be in the group of the partners, which accordingly lends stuff on the basis that if anybody left that or a function of that money, that thing had to come back to April or Peter or whatever. So I think we need to know the, as a matter of course, what the implications of that arm them to be in the group of the partners. These, you know, supporting some people that are floating around either on loan, or whether they transfer effectively that credit into your hands as opposed to being at home, or with this arrangement that they can take it back at work. Because if you lose a staff member, you go back to the department, and that's how it stands at the moment. And so I think you need to come out and clearly
the I agree with honourable member. What subsequently I recognized in the absence was we went back to the department because the agreement of people coming to absence lapsed. So some of the people were actually going back to the and then we had a problem with them. Subsequently, the arrangement that we appoint whoever is there at the absence as an absence employee. And at this stage, there's only two people there that feel employed by the department. That is myself and Kat Gordon. Everybody else is in the RPG now. And then the RPG. the finisher, because they were
not
at this stage. We are at 90 minutes, and we have been issuing letters in terms of the outdoor hopeful that people should come in and assist us. So I think by the end of this month, it will be at 102 or so employees in the outdoor. In terms of the pension, we had an agreement with the department, but they write these things off their books that they give to us. Now, the onus is just on us to reflect them properly as the Auditor General would want us to be.
Alright, so
we resolved that the auditor general was taking that because we didn't prove of every payment. That we have done, the department gave them two problems. The problem was that some of the, you remember, sir, when we moved to the RCMC, the people who were working for road traffic management were supposed to move. However, there were people still in the department who decided they don't want to go to RCMC. And those, some of those people, they were being paid to their employees of the RCMC. Some of the things that were done, and these people, whatever they are doing is for the RCMC. So we try that when the things come to us, to say this one is not our belief, this project is not us, and then send it back to the department. Now on the books, they take what they gave to us to say this is our own, and then they put it on their books. But they don't look at our response and what we said we can take over to them. That was where the problem was.
I
just
about to say that these six queries have been collected. They were in our 33rd May reports. So when we got the Auditor General, so we corrected them all through satisfaction. But they're not still outstanding. The only outstanding at the moment is the question of how we state the previous year's order. We had the previous report. One question outstanding, which is why it happens. So, as I say, the killing of the fruit.
Okay, we were obviously. I think it was important, and thank you for providing some explanation for the delay in the closing of that mill. The discussion was a little bit in the blind, in the dark, if we don't actually have any reports in front of us for the good reasons I've been saying. There's something I think we need to come back to, as we should, in the course of the next year. I'm a bit of a concerned concern when you say that there are members in the department who are supposed to move over individual and personal reasons decided they didn't want to come. Sounds a bit messy, but really these are the transitional problems that we are sure on. But let's come back to that in a more substantive way once we've got the energy. If we can then move on to the negative today, which is to get the R2. So over to you, thanks very much. And then
Yes.
Okay. And
surname
is?
Thank you very much, Mr. Chairman, fellow members. We did appreciate this opportunity that is given to us for us to be able to brief you fully with respect to implementation of the outcomes. To take you through that whole process, we'll just give you a brief introduction, cover the objectives of the R2 Act, the process of the R2, the roles that are played by different role players, the responsibilities, procedures and systems, and cover also the process to originalize the R2 Act and provide also including remarks. In brief, what is very, very important is, at the beginning, to be able to understand it, what we are faced with is a very, very difficult and challenging objective that we need to be able to achieve. And that is with respect to the behavioral patterns that people have, all the motorists, we need to be able to change our behavior so that we can render our country's roads to be a safer environment. In essence, if you look at the statistics and how people have been behaving roads, we need to be able to change them from total disregard of the law to zero tolerance and render them voluntarily to be able to comply with all the road traffic laws that you have. When the Arthur Act was approved by amendments back in 1998, it was followed by three amendments in 1999, 2000 and 2002. The main reason for developing the Act was in terms of the statistical analysis that was done. Only about 20% of traffic offenders were paying their fines. And this in itself had some very, very serious connotations in the sense that even municipalities, whenever they undertake their own process of traffic processes, they make projections in terms of how much money they will be able to collect in terms of those fines. And unfortunately, even for those budgetary processes we're undertaking, only reasonably about 20% is what they could possibly be able to expect. The road traffic offenses within the court systems are not a priority. And this is a step. If I may give an example, currently if one were to commit traffic violation and be issued with a traffic fine, within the municipal district of Kurloni that comprises City Bend that comprises Fundabokarena and Mayasin, the court date that is available currently is October 2008. By the time that specific individual, even if one may feel that the offense or the fine that was issued was unjustifiably issued, that particular person may feel that they want to be able to appear in court to be punished, because we want to be able to make sure that justice does take effect. But by the time the court date comes in 2008, there is no way that specific person will be in a position to remember absolutely everything that would occur in that specific day. Secondly, you would find that the traffic officer issued the offense at that stage could have been deployed to some other division or another. And therefore it becomes impractical one to be able to expect that individual will appear in court and just will be meted out. More than 95% of casualties can also be directly related to traffic violations. It's a lot of the time. You find this particular taxi had, or a big truck had gone over a red robot, which in itself is a traffic violation, ended up causing an accident, killing three or four or even five young girls in the whole process. And to the extent that we are able to clamp down on this behavior of total disregard for the law is the extent that we'll be in a position to be able to assess it. So the critical challenge we're facing is to be able to change people's behavioral patterns so that they can be able to voluntarily comply with the law, thereby rendering our country a much safer environment. In February 2007, the Minister decided the Act will be implemented two phases. The City of Mans pilot in the Sunny Magisterial District, and thereafter would have had opportunity to be able to do a critical analysis in terms of the results of that pilot process, any of the other systems and things that needs to be beefed up to be able to take advantage of that and be in a position to implement it nationally. In short, the objectives of the Act, despite the Criminal Procedure Act, were to encourage law compliance, encourage the payment of penalties, to provide a procedure for the effective and expeditious adjudication of infringements, to alleviate the burden on the courts, and one of the aspects that has gotten just about everybody here to mention, some people excited in looking for this, to penalize infringers through the addition of demerit points and the suspension of licenses, operators, etc. To reward good behavior by reducing points, to strengthen the cooperation between the enforcement and prosecuting authorities, and to establish an agency for the process. If one looks at point number 5 and point number 6, it may seem like it is a contradiction in terms. So on the one hand, we say we want to be able to penalize infringers by allocating the demerit points, because the demerit points, by its very nature, is something that is implemented by subtraction. But if commits a traffic violation, the value of whichever fine goes out with the offense will be allocated against the record of that individual. Point number 6 talks about rewarding good behavior, meaning if one continues doing good behavior and not committing any traffic violations, we'll be able to reduce the specific demerit points that are already allocated in this record. We'll be able to reduce it, thereby rewarding the behavior, because this is what we want to be in a position to be able to encourage. If I may take you through the process of the arrow, you do recognize, yes, you do have that, but did we all just have a look at the screen here? Everything starts occurring from the point that the infringer commits a traffic violation. We have, in terms of the arrow process, separated, and this is the critical difference, that whereas before, we were dealing with all the traffic violations in terms of the Criminal Procedure Act, whereby we're treating them as offences. We've categorized them into two. We have the offences and we also have the infringement. The offences are the ones that have got some very serious implications, and those are aspects, say for example, whereby one has been found guilty of driving under the influence of alcohol or drugs with a negative effect. The infringement are the ones with, my apologies, infringement are the ones with a little bit lesser implication. You found that a specific motorist was doing 76 kilometers per hour, 60 kilometers per hour. And therefore, the offences are the ones that will then, in terms of the procedures, be dealt with under the Criminal Procedure Act of 1977. The infringements will be able to deal with under this new process of ARTO, administratively adjudicating the whole. So it starts with the commitment of a traffic violation, and you will realize that throughout that whole process of ARTO, there are serious implications that are imposed because there are time frames that are unique in respect of the process that has been undertaken. After an offense or a traffic violation has been committed, you've got a period of 32 days within which specific action needs to be taken. And that action is individual to be able to sort out their own business. You've got day until day number 32, whereby if it was an offense that has been committed, the driver will be summoned to be able to appear in court or be arrested for minor infringement. You have the option to be able to pay the penalty, and across the board, we're making provision for a 50% discount on any of the fines that would have been issued. And thereby, we'll be in a position to be able to achieve objective number 3, that is of increasing the payment, the rate of payment of traffic fines. If one does not pay for the penalty within 32 days, you have also another option to be able to submit a representation to the agency. We want to be in a position to be able to make this process as fair as possible. If one feels that the fine has been imposed unjustifiably, we offer a mechanism that this individual can be in a position to be able to change. The very same thing as one has the option within the court process under the Criminal Procedure Act that you can appear before a magistrate and challenge that. At the same time, much as we're doing it as an administrative process, we offer by making possible representation for the individual who can be able to challenge them. Even for a major infringement, you have the option then to be able to pay penalty and automatically qualify for 50% discount. The other option, whereby we make provision whereby all the details that we find, particularly with respect to offences that have been committed, Section 341 of the Criminal Procedure Act, in cases where you find these are camera-related offences, you do not have the interaction of the traffic officer and the motorist, and thereby you get the fine that has been posted on the owner of that vehicle. And therefore, that particular individual has the first option to identify the driver to the agency. We stationed in Haojing, we came for this presentation in town. If we were caught by a traffic jam, the fine will automatically be given to Avis. Avis will have a look at home records and say, on such a date, Mr. Chulitani is the one that actually rented this motor vehicle. And therefore, they have the option then to be able to direct that fine and say, this is the individual that was driving that vehicle and here are his details. One can also apply to the agency to pay in insurance. At the same time, we're offering also another option to be able to go out of this and move into the Criminal Procedure Act, and you have that election to try in court. After the 32-day period has occurred, if action has been taken, either by taking advantage of any of these options, we then will be able to send a courtesy letter reminding the individual motorist, on such a date, here are the particulars, this is the traffic offense, or treatment that was committed, and there's not been any action that has been taken either by virtue of payment of the fine or election to be tried in court or by virtue of submitting representation. Further 32-day period, no action been taken, will be in a position to issue an enforcement order, given another 32-day period that will result in the issuance of warrant. The important difference here, when we're talking about the warrant, this does become a warrant of arrest. This warrant becomes a warrant of execution. That is point number one. And the second point that is critically different in terms of this warrant is, this is a warrant of execution that will be executed only against the movable property, not against the immovable property. Those two differences are very critical and important for one to be able to understand. Process number two goes on further to give you details in terms of what happens after day number 32. After we issue the courtesy letter, will be issued for failure to have responded within that 32-day period. and the available option at this stage, you either have to be able to pay the penalty within 32 days. Remember, at this stage, there is no discount that will be applicable. The discount will be applicable only within the first 32-day period. After the 32-day period, we've issued a KTC letter, reminded you, given you all the particulars in respect to the offences, and you will be able to pay that within 32 days, plus you pay fee for the KTC letter that has been issued. The other option that you've got, you can go to identify the driver to the agency, and you can apply to the agency to pay government. And by all means, this is also a practical, something that we need to be able to be practical in terms of implementing. The one has been issued with a traffic fine of, say for example, 200. We can never be in a position to be able to accept any application for installment, because if you have advantage of paying that within 32-day period, you have automatically a 50% discount, and therefore you will essentially be able to pay 100 rand. The enforcement order, there becomes the serious implication that will be given. This is also issued after no action has been taken 32 days after the issuing of a KTC letter, which is day 4. The importance in respect of the enforcement order is obviously the demerit points get allocated at that specific point. Whatever the traffic violation that would have been committed will have the specific value of the points, the demerit points that are allocated. If no action has been taken, upon the issuing of the enforcement order, will automatically allocate the value of those demerit points. Any given time, whether this is vehicle driving license is expired or professional driving permit, driving license card, none of this will be able to be issued if one applies for that. When it comes out to the motor vehicle driving license, by all means you can apply for it, your vehicle will be licensed, but the license and disc will not be provided. Other available option is to be able to pay within 32 days, but still no discount because it has already fallen off after the 30-day period, and one can be able to apply to the register for revocation of the order. And that, remember, it is still throughout the whole process, we need to be able to provide what one may call an escape clause so that we balance the scale. At any point, if you've got that option, you can be able to challenge it. The same option as one has got by making presentation to a magistrate. Say number 36, still no action that has been taken upon being given the second and the third option, KTC letter and the enforcement order. The movable property may be seized and sold to be able to defray the cost. The license, the professional driving permit will be defaced, including the vehicle driving license disc. The sheriff has the right to be able to mobilize the vehicle, to report the infringer to the credit bureau, and if able to be able to seize the operator card and to be able to deface them. By all means, for this specific aspect to come in, this is for someone that voluntarily may be wanting to disobey the law, because you've got already four options before it comes out to this. As much as this is very, very stringent, it has serious implications, but we have already issued KTC letters, we would have already issued an enforcement order, provided that individual to say, you need to be able to take care of your own business. If you think it was unjustifiably done so, you still have that option, your representation, and if you haven't made any representation, you can also apply revocation of that order. So the whole process becomes fair. There is no way it would be somebody that is totally irresponsible to have let it escalate to a point where the warrant of execution is going to issue. Process number 3, in respect of the implementation, this is the very same option that we're talking about. Individual has the option to say the fine was unjustifiably, I'm making representation. There are only 3 outcomes that will be provided for in terms of the representation. It may be allowed, and if the representation is allowed, then it means we will cancel that infringement notice, and there are no demerit points that will be issued. So you are taken to the very same way that we are at, as if no traffic infringement has been committed. Second result, the representative can be rejected with the reasons. You will have to pay the penalty plus pay the cost of the representation. The third one, the representation will be rejected and with reasons, but you will then have the right and are given the option to be able to get out of the access and take, if you feel still that it is unjustified, you have that option to be able to take it within the criminal procedure. Process number 4, in terms of the payment penalties, we're trying to ensure that we make it as easy as possible to be able to, as well, to encourage for people to be able to do offences. If having come to Cape Town, I have no business here for the next year or so. It becomes difficult if the only option for me to be away is to physically come to be in Cape Town. And therefore, by making vision that we can be able to pay those through the bank ATM, even currently before the implementation of the APDO, if one had been issued with a traffic fine within the Magisterial District of Tshwane, you are able to pay your preferences through the FNB ATMs. So we're making that decision so that you've got many different options, and thereby we'll be able to be towards increasing the payment rates. Process number 5, in terms of the issuing of the notices, we'll be able to issue the notices if there's been insufficient payment that has been made, or if the specific individual who have already entered into arrangement to make payments in installment, depending of course on the value of the fine, and you have not honored the arrangement that has already been made. Also, in terms of 1 and 2, you've got the option then you need to be able to make payment in 3-2 days. If that the arrangement is made in installment, you need to be able to make the payment, effect that within the 7 days after the notice has been issued. Failure to comply with the notice, a member with the enforcement order will result in the issuance of the warrant of execution. The exciting part of it, the allocation of demerit points, and this is where we also expecting to have some wonderful interaction with regarding the fact that we're making presentations of it, and I can tell the people are so excited that why can't we just automatically start with the allocation of demerit points today? We'll be able to find out how the portfolio committee feels about it. Demerit points are allocated to infringers as follows: upon the payment of the infringement. And do remember, the reason why we're allocating that is, yes, it's a factual thing that the traffic infringement has been committed. And by making the payment, we're treating that as an acknowledgement of guilt. You're not going to be in a position to pay if you really believe that you did not commit it. So a payment of that is an acknowledgement of guilt, we will allocate the demerit points. Secondly, if one has elected to go out of the APDO process and have the cases adjudicated within the Criminal Procedure Act, upon the court results, and you are found guilty, you will then be able to take the demerit points. Third one, upon the issuing of the enforcement order. In the case of 2 or more infringements, in terms of the legislation, it says, in case where 2 or more infringements arising out of the same set of circumstances. Let me paint the picture for you. Giving an example whereby you've got someone that is being raped. You've got what we call a horse and a trailer. The driver goes through a red traffic light. He commits an infringement. And if you've got, just to be able to complicate it and to be able to simplify it at the same time, you've got this process whereby people have been retrenched and some of them are working for Coca-Cola and they were given a second opportunity and they're making to be owner drivers of these trucks. And in other instances, you've got others that are just being hired specifically to be able to do that. So the driver has committed a traffic violation by going with a robot. The ticket gets issued against the driver. Upon the traffic officer doing a thorough check of the motor vehicle, he realizes that there is no license disc that has been displayed. So therefore, there is another infringement that has been committed. But the infringement is not committed by the driver. That is an infringement that goes against the owner of the truck. Secondly, when he goes out, he checked it. We meet from the 1st of January last year, all the trucks have got to be able to display a chevron around it. So he realized that there is no chevron or yellow marking around the trailer. So that is another offense. He checked and he realizes also the braking mechanism and the trailers do not work. So you've got 3 or more infringements, but it arises out of the very same set of circumstances. Upon issuing any of the infringement notices, there is a value that goes in terms of the demerit points. We say in those circumstances we've got 3 violations that have been committed, and all of them, the first offense has got the value of 3 demerit points, another one has a value of 2 demerit points, and another one has got a value of 5 demerit points. We're going to issue a total of 10 demerit points because it's from the same circumstance. We will issue only the value of the highest points from the same circumstance. And upon the driver paying the points automatically get allocated to the operator. and we have put them a threshold mark of 12 points, whereupon if one goes beyond the threshold of 12 points, the driving life of that specific individual is then going to be suspended. So everybody is going to start with a slate of zero. There's no zero, there are no points. By committing traffic violations, you've got one demerit that is allocated, or two, or whatever the thing. Until such time that you've got, now you've swerved. Now you know you're sitting between a hard place. By the time that you've got another offense that has been committed, and the value of that is one demerit point, now you've got 30 points. The driving license will be suspended for a period of 3 months for every point that one has gone over the threshold mark. If you've got 15 points, then it means your driving license gets suspended for a period of 3 months multiplied by the number of points over the threshold, meaning, so it's 3 months multiplied again. So it's 9 months that your driving license gets suspended. At the same time, remember on point number five, that when we allocate the demerit point, objective number six is when we reward good behavior by reducing that point. So you've got this person with 15 points whose driving license gets suspended for 9 months. And we're saying we will then be in a position to reward the good behavior for every period of 3 months that you're driving without committing traffic violation. We reward by reducing one demerit point out of your vehicle, out of your record. So if you're sitting at a point of 15, in 9 months you would have already brought yourself back in line, because 3 months we reduce one your record by the value of one. So in 3 months you will be back to your threshold of 12. Process number 7 provides for the disqualification and cancellation of the driving license for operator card. Third aspect, we say exactly what we just discussed now. After you've gone to the threshold, we suspend your driving license or the operator card. We suspend the driving license for a period of 3 months. However, when it comes out, because after we have implemented that, after we would have access to all the statistics and we would do all the analysis, if we realize that we've got certain individuals, and it is going to be much easier for us to be able to identify those individuals and see the behavioral patterns that these people have got when they're driving on the road, we'll identify them. After your driving license has been suspended for a period of 3 times, that automatically results in the actual cancellation of the driving license. Now, the suspension of the driving license means after you've gone over a suspensive period, you automatically have the right to be able to drive again. But when it comes up to the cancellation of the driving license, after you've gone through the suspensive period, then it means when you want to be able to drive, you need to undergo that whole procedure. You must go and apply for a learner's license. If you are lucky, you will pass it. But remember, a lot of people that have driving licenses got that before the K-52 rules even was implemented. So it might be difficult for them to be able to get. Pass that learner's license and then apply for the driving license. But at the same time, this is within the actual process. It may be that one person has never had the driving license suspended. If you have gone through the court process and the magistrate has looked at that specific case and said this infringement or this offense is of such a serious nature that I need to be able to cancel this specific person's driving license. So we're making provision for that. If it comes out of the court process, we don't have any jurisdiction over that. We will be guided by whatever decision will be made by the magistrate. To give you an understanding and a tabulation of, if you look at it, this Schedule 3 of the regulations that have been published. If I take you through that, this is being published for public comment now. We say for those cases whereby speed limit is 60 kilometers per hour and you have an individual that has done between 76 and 80 kilometers per hour, that is classified as an infringement. The penalty unit that is applicable is 10 penalties relating to one demerit point. The amount of the penalty is 500 rand, and automatically across the board making provision for a 50% discount. So if one pays within the 30-day period, you will be able to pay a total amount of 250 rand. These are the infringements. In those cases whereby an individual has done more than 160 kilometers per hour in a 120 kilometer zone, we're saying we're taking it out of our own process. That is not an infringement, that is classified as an offense. An offense is get judged upon under the jurisdiction of the magistrate. So that goes through the court process automatically for this specific one that relates to automatic allocation of 6 demerit points. There is no value of money there because, as we have seen also, within, for example, the province of KwaZulu-Natal, you've got people that are from Gauteng find record amounts of 50,000, 100,000. So whatever the magistrate decides, we will be guided by that, and the discount amount is not applicable in that. That is why we did not put any value in that. Driving with the wrong license, that is a major infringement. The penalty units are taken. The demerit points come into 3, the total value being 1,500 rand, taking advantage of the discount if you pay within 32 days to be able to pay 750 rand. These two are the more important ones, driving more than 160 km per hour, plus also driving while intoxicated under the influence of drugs or with an effect of alcohol. So it goes through the court process, we will be guided by the results that will be coming in. If I take you through what we needed to do in terms of the responsibilities, the procedures, the system, we've got in terms of the ARTO Act that makes provision for the establishment of the Road Traffic Enforcement Agency. We are sitting here at the RTMC with the law enforcement unit, ARTO unit being there. We will be able to enter agreement with the issuing authorities. Now the issuing authorities, those will be the provincial, metropolitan and local traffic officers, including the African Police Services. Enter into agreement to be able to undertake all these law enforcement functions on behalf of the Road Traffic Management Corporation. The ARTO Act makes provision for the appointment of representation officers and the sheriffs. The representation officers will enter into arrangement and agreement between the RTIA and the RAF. And that is also to be able to ensure that, in terms of the whole process, nobody can be viewed as being the player and the referee at the same time. We will be able to undertake all the functions that are important on behalf of the RTIA, but to be able to adjudicate when you send a representation, that must be under the auspices of the Traffic Enforcement Agency. The same instructions that will be coming out will be given to the to be able to make executions in there. They've got the board and the registrar and the reporting to the Minister of Transport. Same with the Road Traffic Management Operation, we've got the board, and as our chairman has indicated, the CEO has been appointed. We've got the shareholders committee that they are reporting to. All other role players, including the post office and the banks, we shall be able to ensure that we facilitate the process and make it as seamless as possible. We are also making provision for the establishment of the E-Force, the Enforcement Performance Regulator. Well, with respect to the E-Force, is what we are providing there, the traffic officers will be issued with a pocket computer that will enable them to be able to link with the E-Natives any given point in time that he stops a specific motorist along the way. It makes it easier for effective law enforcement, because then you could access the record of that specific driver and also the record of the motor vehicle. A lot of the times we found that we had a problem in respect of the licensing authorities losing a lot of money, also making it difficult for law enforcement officers. Those situations where you find a motorist has his own car being declared unfit to be on the public road, so the traffic office takes and defaces the license disc. But immediately after having that, the traffic officer may be on a 4-hour shift. The only time that they'll be able to come back to the office to have those information updated would be after 5 or 6 hours. In the interim, the motorist quickly goes, runs to the license department, declares that his license disc has been lost, or declares that a rock has fallen on his windscreen, and thereby that facilitates for him to be able to get a duplicate. And by getting the duplicate, it automatically means the whole exercise has been undertaken by the traffic officers is fruitless, because he takes the vehicle off the road, he comes out, he applies for a duplicate. Now, by putting them with the E-Force register, that interface will enable him immediately when he declares this motor vehicle to be unfit, it automatically updates the E-Natives, and it doesn't matter what that person goes to be able to apply for, that he will not be able to get the license in this. Now, you will be able to see, as we indicated, the commitment of a traffic violation, either as an infringement of an offence. You will be able to get that by interaction, by engaging personal service, or if it is Section 41 camera notice, you will get that information via post. and if it is an offense and the driver had been arrested, goes to court, and if the, depending on the outcome of the court, that individual may also be arrested and be sentenced to jail, and you can see, not a very happy person there, but the good thing is, he can take advantage of free boarding and lodging courtesy of the South African Police Services. He will be, well, not a graded hotel, but be able to provide for him. All the details that comes out into the court results, will be able to capture them on the National Contravention Register. And the National Contravention Register also would make it much easier with the e-force, that interaction that will be able to provide for the traffic officers at any given point in time, make it more powerful whenever they go out and establish roadblocks. To the extent that they can be able to get the most updated information is the extent that it will be much more effective and efficient. All the payments that get held will automatically update the National Contravention Register, either paid by the post office, the banks, the transfers, or over the internet. We will be able, in terms of the operations of the ARCO, facilitate the reconciliation and the financial management, and do the distribution and disbursement of it to the post office, every one of those that will be acting on an age basis. The main responsibilities that we are taking with the RTMC, firstly was for the preparation for implementation, the development of the contravention register, the printing and distribution of the infringement notices and all the other forms, and we will receive and process the above forms, the receiving and management of the app income, and also importantly, the monthly apportionment of funds and the distribution to various authorities, because everybody else then will be acting agent on behalf of the RTMC. We will distribute and prepare monthly ARCO performance financial information report. The critical one that is more exciting here is the performance report. And based on the performance report, we'll be able to achieve some of the other objectives that may not be said simply. We will be able to get statistical analysis and do profile in terms of the behavioral patterns of the different motorists. And at any given point, when the portfolio committee wants to be able to say, let's take a process, let's see how far we've come. What are, how many people have already committed this type of offenses since the implementation of the ARCO? What is the impact that we've had? We would have point A from which we can be able to start and do a comparative analysis and say, with the implementation of ARCO, this is what we've done. This is the impact that it has on society, and these are the categories and the types of patterns that patterns in terms of behaviors of people under the ages of 25, 18 and 25. And maybe the most impact has been people with ages of 25 and 34. Whatever statistical analysis that will be needed, we'll be able to derive from them. The progress to date in conclusion, we have developed the MARA implementation plan that provides for a business analysis showing the impact of all the things that will be needed, the processes, the procedures, how to be able to implement what systems needs to be in place, and give you the total complete architectural design and the impact of how we're going to be able to implement the ARCO. Project EPOS, this is the exciting one that I have stated, that makes provision for providing the traffic officers with those pocket computers for them to be able to link on a real-time online basis whenever you're out on the roads. The development of the National Contravention Register, upon which all the contravention, all the infringement information will be based for easy access, and will automatically be updated upon any of the payment or upon processing of the representation to be able to say, I feel unjustifiably treated by virtue of this, and I want to be able to challenge it. The third providers have also been appointed for the ARCO training. We're making provisions now to be able to train the traffic officers and all the admin staff that will be involved within the ARCO process, including also for the magistrates, because they need to be in a position to be able to know. And we have got to be able to ensure that all the different road failures that can have an impact get involved in there. Provision has been made in terms of that to provide training at 46 different locations countrywide. We're making provision for the first batch of training that will involve 2,300 officials that will be trained. Marketing and communication, the service provider also been appointed and are busy finalizing the whole marketing and communication and educational material. We'll be starting forthwith now from November and conducting as well some media briefings with respect, ensuring that the people know what the RP is all about and how to be able to create positive messages there as well. The consultant has also been appointed to assist in the process of making sure that the ARPA process operationalized correctly, all other systems, processes, things that are needed are being in place and adequately addressed. The ARPA technical committee has been formed. The first sitting that they had was on the 5th of July 2007, and the ARPA technical committee comprises all the different role players within the traffic fraternity provincial. We've got representation of from the chief directors across all the provinces, and also the municipalities are being represented. We've got also the representation of the Department of Justice. The exciting part is the ARPA Act makes provision that there must be very good interaction between the Department of Justice and the RTMC. And by virtue of that, instead of the establishment of the Road Traffic Infringement Agency, there are five members that need to be appointed to the board. The sixth person must be a representative of the National Directorate of Public Prosecution. We have said that the Department of Justice has gone very active, and we have already appointed Advocate Tom Dicker, who is representative, to be sitting on the board of the Road Traffic Infringement Agency. We've got also the engagement of the court services division that have been thoroughly engaged, and we are in constant discussions with them, and they're assisting us in finalizing the regulations and to be able to ensure that the whole process moves speedily. So we're excited about the involvement of the Department of Justice. We also involve also the South African Police Services. They've got the National Municipal Police Forums, whereby we've been engaging with them and also making representations and ensuring that they know the whole process. The ARPA unit has been established. I was appointed and started taking charge from the 1st of August, and we've got also the staff that will be supplementary to that, that have been appointed and will start resuming the duties on a staggered basis, and we will have all the managers now from the end of November. All the managers will then be starting in there. And we've got the offices that have been identified within them. So we're pretty excited about it and ensuring that we can get to making some progress. The draft regulations have been published for on the 28th of September 2007 in Government Gazette 302/5. And they were published for federal government, and we are in the process to be able to finalize all the comments coming there. And in terms of that, we're doing the very best that we can be able to make it an interactive and engaging process. The establishment of the ARPA technical committee sitting here that comprises representatives from the municipalities and also from the provinces, they are the ones when we got a meeting that will be a workshop on the 22nd of November, whereby we will be able to finalize the ARPA regulations and publish the body before the end of this year. Also, work in progress. The ARPA website is being developed currently. However, we were not going to be able to wait until we have finalized everything else. In the meantime, we have uploaded all the information that is needed in respect of the ARPA has been appended onto the Arrive Alive website with a link to the Traffic Management Corporation and the regulations, the app, all the information and public notification that we want to be able to give the big is easily accessible from their website. A risk assessment is being conducted currently to be able to bring to the fore any of the risks that may be associated with the implementation of the ARPA, so that it gives it advantage to be able to put into place all the mechanical processes, procedures, whatever is needed to be able to mitigate those risks and to be able to manage. The appointment of the Road Traffic Infringement Agency Board and the Registrar, that from our side has been complete. We have sent it through to the Department for processing and approval by the Minister, and we just are waiting for the Minister to be able to inform us this has been approved. Then we'll be able to go make publications in all the media to ensure that we finalize that whole process. The appointment of the representation officers and sheriff, the representation officers, remember, as we also stated, it is important for us to be able to ensure that we can never be viewed as the player and the referee at the same time. So that is something that will be finalized by the Road Traffic Infringement Agency. However, we have been thoroughly engaging with the sheriffs by virtue of the board of the sheriffs who have been constantly in engagement with us, and they already had a meeting also with us to be able to discuss the specific technicalities as respect how they're going to be affected by the application. So we are in constant engagement with them, and we're very excited about how enthusiastic they have been throughout the whole process. Also, the between the road
traffic.
Will they tell that to the
general?
Oh, no, wonderful.
Carry on.
The contract between the Road Traffic Management Corporation and the Road Traffic Infringement Agency, that would also be thoroughly finalized upon the appointment of the infringement agency boards and the registrar, and also the RTMC and the issuing authorities and the post office. We have also done the first draft in terms of the RTRA strategic and business plans, which on the appointment will need to be approved and accepted by the Traffic Infringement Agency. Mr. Chairman, honourable members, much dearly appreciate your time. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Dester. Thank you very much for that. Okay. What does have been going up? Okay. Mr. President, have a say. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And
this is
when a technician has come in and hours, they know how to say that,
So I'm just trying to find out. And you said that this is a pilot project. That is, you are doing a pilot project in China. How long have you been doing that? In the years or months that has been a pilot project, have you seen your principles being fulfilled?
Okay, I think I should also indicate that the person that was presenting, yes, he has got some passion for this particular event. He has got all the end results or the end goals. But throughout the presentation, there is much of an indication that we may still find ourselves just much later that we are not really making progress on the ground. There is quite a lot of gaps and a lot of work in progress, even those that are supposed to be assisting to implement the left kids. They seem to be working in to get to detail that there is an indication that on a minor infringement then a person will have access to representation, but when you get to major infringement it looks like that representation is not indicated, you know. I'm not sure whether it is taken for granted that all infringements then person will have the opportunity for representation. But given the very process one within the 32 days, it looks like for major infringements and then his representation is not there. And what is more is that the people will be expected to pay a fee for the representation. In other words, that it is taken for granted that most people, because they've been given a set of already they are bothered to give up, because my understanding is that the representation, when you have got a feeling that you are not wrong, and the question is why might we have to pay to the agents. The other issue, of course, is in relation to SARS. And SARS has moved a little bit far that aid to be paid to SARS can be paid right through across all the banks. Why this one specifically only with FNB? Is there any technical problem? A similar arrangement that a person of a specific bank cannot be read out of our activities. The demerit points, more infringements, more points. No infringement, then we lose points. And then is this reduction of points gonna go beyond the if I take 50 years of no infringement, will I simply the minus 1,000 points? It's going to end up at zero. Then the nature of the points, the demerit, if one looks at the situation of taxi drivers who are always on the road on a daily basis in vehicles that they are not owning, and the infringements in terms of indicator lights, tires and that may end up being the responsibility of the vehicle owner but not necessarily the driver. Is it not possible that a safety driver from morning to the afternoon may have knocked out at the 12 point and reaching to 15 points and get his license removed in one day? I mean, it's safety drivers on the road, you may have only one speed limit for them, and a tire, a hooter, and the indicator, just in one day, all those things being written off. You find that now you're hitting the maximum of 12, 15, or 20 points, and loses license. I just wanted to have an indication whether kind of things have been considered. The other one, of course, is in relation to those critical flood areas whose driving licenses actually means of life, and when traffic officers who are supposed to be taking people to justice then end up in the power to remove their driver's license for a legal driving license and just stop it and pass judgment there and there on the road and instead of actually giving people an opportunity to present themselves in front of magistrates and that's before they actually lose their licenses. I just want to understand whether that is considered because the people in the rural area are driving parties, they actually make life out of it, nothing else. The other one is your Schedule 3. That table, there are gaps. There are serious gaps and I think it's part of eight. Exceeding 60 kilometers per hour, then you have got 86 to 9 kilometers. Then you have specified some access there. But above 90, I'm sure you said that you will only have 60 kilometers. After a maximum of 90, above 90, the contractor managed to receive the because there is nothing that is incentivized. So you definitely have no recourse to deal with anybody driving 120 kilometers to CD there. And on 120, exceeding 120 as well, I think provided 136 to 140. And then the next one is 46 to 150. Anyone who drives between 140 and 143 will not be caught in terms of this specific schedule. And also on the 120, 146 to 150, then from 150 jump to
the maximum.
Yes, I think there are these details that must be looked at.
10%. Okay, 10%. That's quite a lot of things, so let's keep the questions at that table. Shall we start, before we get into the selectors, shall we start with the functions of the RTMP and I'll suggest that maybe the broader functions and the position military.
Yeah, and thank you, Sir Chair. I think as was correctly stated, we only find of the 10 functions allocated to RTMP initially. In fact, RTMP is not one of them. RT was not one of the initial functions we were given to RTMC. But when the board met the minister in February, he agreed that we would take over R2 and we would run with R2 and we would actually give RT as one of the functions. There is still a little bit of a lack of clarity as to when the other functions will become fully correct with the RTMC. And I think as we look up capacity and also trust with the minister and the Shores Committee, so all functions will come over. But the minister has stated there in February, said that you two keep implementing on to the new game. So that function has come.
Thank you. And just to say, I think certainly we've also, from the committee, been urging that this should be the case. I think when we've met over the last couple of times, let's get the office moving, let's make that a focus. Otherwise, we've been working with RTMC being a little bit separate around dozens of functions and then get their mandate and so on. And a lot of the other things will start from us in particular, I believe, once we've got a group message. So, just to recall, I think I should recall the committee in general. That we're happy with the decision question of the minister. Thanks for that clarity. Shall we then move over to the dozens of ARCO related questions?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I will hand over to my colleagues who will address some of their questions and then we'll see you next time.
we will share some of the questions from the Shmila. So there was a question on the functions one has been dealt with. A question on the distribution of funds. The way we structured the collection of funds was that firstly we said there should be a central or national contravention register that will record every infringement that is done, that is committed in this country. So that law at one point, at any given point, what's going on where in the country. And when people are going to pay, because of Stream Afro, we arrange that every payment that should reflect on the same system, so that we know if you are paid in Cape Town on the 31st day before the due date, it should reflect, so that you shouldn't be sent to Cape Town and punished. And all these things, we said that it should be centralized so that the system can work properly. If a person is going to pay fine in Cape Town through any admin and we don't know from a central point, we don't get that money, it's going to be a problem. People will be punished and failed. Hence we said we get all the money. One, because we do that, there'll be agreement with those authorities. As we all know, the RCMC Act says law enforcement is a part of the RCMC. There will be agreements between the authorities to perform to certain standards. There is what we call National Traffic Law Enforcement Code that we are finalizing, and there will be signing a contract with the RCMC agreements. Performance-wise,
by the way, one of the functions.
Performance, how they're going to perform, because we've got the data. What are the issues in that area, and then we can from realize what the RCMP is driving, reduction in incidents. Okay, so the money will be going to the central point, as just indicated. There's a system that we put in with the financial people to say there will be income into ASTO, and they will look at if it's paid within 32, it's discounted money, and then that amount, the whole amount of the should go to the authority that issued the fine. Should it happen that you pay after 32 days, you are going to pay after the courtesy letter has been issued. Now you are going to pay the amount plus the money for the courtesy letter. Now that's where the remainder of the money goes into the agency. So the red money will be the agency. The money that should go to the authorities will still go to the authorities. I don't know whether it's clear on that one.
You will get, ALPA will get 50% on a full amount, basically. But the also for the
That's to say something on that separate. You realize that what when we did the financial model, we even realized that there will be a lot of money that may be there with the agency. The other 50% plus. Well, the KPC letters and whatever, those are operational, to pay for what you get. But the other 50%, the act itself, the minister at some stage, and the court, must take a decision as to how they dispense this money to the office, in terms of law enforcement equipment and all this.
But for the moment, the approach is full amount, except for the standard amount, and then part, if it's not discounted. And if there's a much better compliance, then the current 20% federal authority, for instance, or provincial department might find themselves getting perhaps more rather than that, even if they're discounted. And plus the fines look a little bit higher. So the discounted amount looks a little bit like what they currently are at a rough guess. So if there's a high level of compliance, which there should be, in practice, there'll be a better additional motivation for
even the traffic, because any day on the road, that the fence rate or the fence rate has dropped to such an extent that the income to be very low to everybody. That's on the subject as well. So the focus is not on the money issue as such, but you're quite correct in what was said here, that the issuing authority, the traffic
law enforcement authorities, but a full amount of the fine, and then the process that the infringement agency had to embark upon to finalize the case, there will be some money available to the infringement agency for that. So I think on principle is also a good thing, because the infringement will start paying for all the processes needed to bring that case to finality, and it will not be a burden borne by the taxpayers of the country. So I think well, that's also a very good idea.
Mr. Tillerson,
you also wanted
to
add, yeah.
Yeah, I just also wanted to add a question that was raised by the first speaker, that also in terms of that, we have a provision that deals with the apportionment of penalties for fines that are collected from the issuing authorities, which we are supposed to be implementing. And also we have, through the consultation processes with the issuing authorities, have highlighted these issues. But however, we have not yet agreed on the percentage for the apportionment, but the issuing authorities are aware, because currently we are busy engaging with the national roadshow, whereby we make presentations in respect of the issuing authorities, and they raise all the issues that they have. And also through the Art Technical Committee that has been recently established, which comprises of all the members from the various municipalities, the provincial authorities and so forth. So we sit in and we discuss all these issues and we try and agree on what is the best suitable solution that would be workable for all the issuing authorities. So the issue of allocation of fines and apportionment as how we did it in the end, is under consideration. It's just that we need to finalize the percentage for apportioning all those funds that are collected by the agency, and also to complete the agreements that are going to be concluded amongst the provincial authorities at CMC, so that we can formalize the whole process.
Okay, so the 50% that we're talking about is a proposal for the
exactly.
Coming from your side. If I don't mind, if I don't mind, if you just so that we get something that's critical here, as you don't mind me also discussing, with 20 pilots, there have been a couple of questions already, but just on the cash funds, are we talking about Swanee as a geographical area or Swanee as the authority? In other words, if, for instance, the issuing authority, whatever it's called, is the province that's starting rather than municipal interests, this will apply in this part? Or, do you understand the question I'm asking?
Mm-hmm. Would the driver go through
That's a separate thing. What I'm trying to say is, we're talking about an agreement with the Swan Municipal Authority in the pilot, or are we talking about an agreement with all official issuing authorities, presumably they're for Kaohsiung as well?
In terms of Swan, principle comes from what the Act says, that the Act can be implemented in various places at the time. So what we do, we said, imagine serial districts of Swan.
Right.
So any offense that happens within Swan, it doesn't mean issue. The
okay. So the pilot will affect.
Yeah.
And therefore
it,
you will need.
It can be SAPS issuing,
yeah.
And meant, as long as it's within Swan,
okay.
It will apply.
So the proportionate issue that you need to deal with in the pilot, one that is going to have multiple agreements,
mm-hmm.
And not just a one-off.
Yeah.
Okay. And obviously that's part of what we're learning from the pilots, but from all the other teething problems that invariably occur in these things, will also be if the proportionate process is going to work for the metro in terms of the budgeting projections and so on, which will then help the ongoing negotiations, because at the moment it's a little bit blind, isn't it? The negotiations we're talking about.
Yes.
You're selling and trying to propose a particular thing that everyone's trying to get without knowing the sources. Yes.
On that part, I think there are two questions related to that. One is,
let's get on to that.
Yeah. How long has it been running? And also, what happens in 12 months' time? The pilot project has not yet started. The intention, I think, is in February next 2008. And when it started, it will be, as I said, the pilot project. We will issue the merit points, we will issue funds, but at the end of the pilot, those demerit points will actually fall away. The people won't, it will be a dummy and the issue of an infringement until it's issued nationally. Only when it goes national will the actual demerit points apply.
Just clarity on the chairperson. The pilot, as Chairperson said, we want to get a sense of this new CC Old West. What are the problems? However, in terms of fight, the infringement, people must be paid. The only part where people are not going to suffer is the generic, even there on their record, but just for us to see what is going on and communicating to people to say, if this was applicable, this is how much you'll be doing. So that's something that we want to inculcate in the people so that we do media campaigns with those results. However, the fines themselves, they are going to be applicable. People must pay. If they don't pay, the same process that has been there is going to come to full cost. Warrants, sheriffs, and everything like that.
So we move on then, if that's okay, to some of the other issues anyway.
Okay.
So one is the breath alarm issue.
Chair, thank you. We in terms of the law enforcement code, as I indicated, sub-officers must perform to certain standards that would be having to implement it. And one of the key success factors that one of the key things that depends this project depends on is the availability of equipment. As the RPMC, we have already identified the problem, and from the money that we're getting into treasury, we ask provinces to indicate their needs. We remember that there are vehicles that we have provided, there are equipment that we have provided to provinces. Some of the provinces are under to take them back and give them to people who can perform better, like in Kup. We gave them to Ekurhuleni. Through that process, we want to put in the agreement giving the people some equipment so that they can do their job better. As the RCMC. So that has been identified, and year after year, we try to budget in order for us to assist provinces also.
Okay.
Okay.
See,
I mentioned one of those equipment is breathalyzers, which is the first. And there's also, I believe, special equipment which is very expensive, but whereby the breathalyzer will be acceptable in court. So it's a specially impacted, I think, to be reported. But we don't have, they can actually use the breathalyzer evidence on site in court and will be accepted. But currently, the current breathalyzers are not acceptable in court for prosecution. You have to draw blood. You have to go to the hospital and draw blood.
My understanding is, and that is that in some jurisdictions, are being accepted and other cases not. And which could think of my side, we've approached the justice minister. There's a problem here. And it's one of the issues that holds their back. I'm hoping the whole system will help thin out the magistrate and the court roles are clogged up, and it's fantastic attention that our time function. But for them it's a big problem. Their record doesn't look good because there's the backlog is back. But one of the key things is that they're not is the flood in as you were saying, the forensic evidence and the capacity of this lab and whatever. And I think also that the different traditions are applying the law differently, interpreting it differently. So I think it's something that from your side, but also your perspective, that also needs to be clarified. And the law needs to be, there seems to be kind of a set of conventions that then which are not, and I gather you have a similar impression to me.
Yes.
So it's something we've got, I think, quite a bit quite long. So we move from the rest of the thing.
Okay. Just to report to the committee, I think the committee is aware that like, we went to court and won a case here in Cape Town,
yeah.
In the court,
yeah.
And that should be treated as a precedent,
yeah.
And it's not happening. That's
that
where we are.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay.
So there was an issue about the fees that people must pay when they do representation. I think it was from the honourable member Masudi. The issue here is when you do your representation, when you get an infringement and you are notified with that, you are going to do a representation. You take a stand. You do a representation, you send it. These are the reasons why I was speeding. That's what we are expecting in fact. We are not expecting people who say, no, this traffic officer is wrong doing this. We are expecting that huge numbers of people who are saying, no, no, I was taking my field. We are expecting that. And we are saying, yes, you can do that. You are not going to pay a cent. However, when the representation office says, look, you are wrong, you must pay. And you must pay for that service that was rendered by the representation office. If the representation officer says, no, no, you are right, the traffic officer or whatever you have done, you shouldn't have been fined, then pay nothing.
Okay.
May
I also clarify the process when it comes to representation? Currently, we are aware that the situation that we face with is that when people are losing representation, they just want to court and they will speak to the prosecution and voila, that's it. But currently, we in the proposed regulation, a certain format that we are proposing, and hopefully the public members have accepted it as it is, there's no changes on it. What kind of a representation format, which is going to be downloaded from the website, which will be made available to the nearest police station so that one can get a copy. It's a standard form whereby one would be able to set out all the relevant facts that would be able to need. That would need in order for us to process that representation. There will also be a representation officers that are going to be independent and impartial people to deal with those representations. And for example, the situation that we are looking at, we're looking at a situation whereby if somebody who in East London has committed an offence but wants to make a representation, that person would download that representation form from the website and push it to one of us. When this representation reaches the central office, which will be in Centurion, or Midrand, then those representations would be allocated to the relation offices according to the jurisdiction area. And if it's a representation being received from East London, somebody in Gauteng or somebody in Northwest will be to hear that representation. But we are looking at representation officers who are people that have got skills and qualifications and also exposure within the road traffic offences related matters. Somebody would be able to look at it thoroughly and objectively and be able to understand what the situation is.
Yes, that's a paper process.
So, and also those are the representation officers, the arguments that would be entered into with them to perform those kind of services and retain them. So, also the agency, together with our functional unit, will be incurring fees in the sense of the representation process. So, though we have proposed for a set fee, which is a bit low, because there are also the fee that relates to the postage of the responses and also some other correspondence are between the regulation officer and the issuing authority. So we have proposed a certain fee for that to cover all those instances which would be paid then should the representation officer decline representation that has been made. So that's the kind of scenario that I'm trying to paint. Trying to picture actually to give a picture to the honourable members as to what process of representation would entail, and also the justification for also getting for also having to request that it seems to be paid in respect of the representation that has been declined by the person.
Yes.
I'm really a little bit confused.
Yes.
Okay. As a setup, we advocate that the offices would be set up in Pretoria, be it Centurion or Mid, and we have already engaged with the SAPO office to provide us with some services of ensuring that all the documentation that must go to the after functional unit are posted by registered email, by registered mail. So with that, we don't foresee that there's going to be a delay in terms of receiving the switch because of the service level agreements that we've had with the sub.
So the process of ARSO, what we have done, we said all the processes, I think one of the slides it was there, even the payment of fine, we want to do it at license testing centers, maritime authorities, post office, and all those things. However, in ATM and so forth, however, representation, our view, Chairperson 1, is that there's a post office everywhere. Every corner, there's a post office. We have to go to the post office and say, we must have an agreement with the post office so that those issues in relation to ASCO, they have even developed as we speak a system that feeds our system into the National Contravention Register. So that we get things, they shouldn't be delayed, because we foresaw a problem where posting Chairperson, this thing might not even reach us. The letter might not even reach us. So there are interfaces that post office has done. We feed them information, they feed us information. As we speak, the interface is only working on renewals, license renewals. We give them information to say these ones are hiring, and then they send it off. Once they send it off, it comes back to us, tells us which ones have been delivered, which ones addresses are wrong, and all those that information we have as we speak. So it will work on the screening. That people should be able to go to post office and interact with the post office in terms of this. Those who post by registered mail, the act is quite clear, so it can be done.
Okay, so I think the question that I'm looking at is, and I suppose we'll only really learn it in practice from the pilot, but what kind of barrage of representation are we going to receive? Obviously there's the motivation in the that if you go for representation, you're going to find yourself liable to paying double the amount that you have. There's an incentive to throw it out there. Okay. But we don't quite know how. And people will also also the severity of other life, which the representations are met, will obviously begin to set a trend. And people will start to learn that all these whimsical things that people invoke aren't going to work. But presumably it's got to have some kind of fairness about this. The concept, because I mean, it's a serious system. It's got to be independent, qualified people who, and I think that's what they're asking. Presumably also we need to put pressure on those people to make sure that they process things rapidly and effectively, and we need to support the contracting, whatever it is, sufficient number to ensure that this is a piece of flow, that there is a couple of days really on these things. Yeah. Okay.
The most worrying factor is the element of prohibition for people to make redundancy because of, as you have already said, that if you are found that you are wrong, then you are forced to pay this kind of an amount. And the data, I think it has got the potential of not making people to accept justice.
But there's always the option.
The first option is to go to court.
You can go to court. So that option is not being removed. That option which exists, we did put that away. When we were dealing with the law, there was a lot of, and we couldn't. But for a lot of, and again, that's something we'll learn, happens. How many people are still going to clog up the court, and so on, and how many are going to say, let's attend, but we can't take away that right. And the other thing we're talking about now is an intermediary between the court route and just paying. So do we have to say?
I think most of it's been covered now, but one thing that is the worrying factor that Honourable Member referred to, although this representation is coming to the central point, there could be 500, 600, 700 people right across the country in which a standard contract is entered into. They will receive those certification documents by electronic means. They will pay by handling each and every case. They will not be people in the permanent employ of the ODAT infringement agency, so that's a very flexible system. You can just enter into more contracts with more people if you feel that is backlog starting to develop. So this is why, how it was foreseen. So I think that the question of backlog can be managed very, very easily. Backlog for that, and I think the RPI is just had to appoint enough people with experience. That can be private magistrates, or it can be lawyers, or it must be somebody with a legal background, some experience in road traffic matters, and that would qualify them then to be a representations officer. But it will not be a group of people sitting in one office trying to do this.
And
every
budget
is for those people.
Mr. Chairman, yes, maybe as a board member I shouldn't offer this, but this is the intention of paying the representation's fee. If you then guilty, that fee remains with the agency, and if you isn't, then you pay nothing. So that will partly fund the cost attached to concerned representations.
The follow-up is, you know, when it comes to the employment of this specialist or whatever, they need to look at the representation, and they think that only pay when they are wrong. Now, if all those representations in majority people are not wrong, then they've got a problem of the accumulation of the representation. Is that not going to influence the agency together with the those specific lawyers? You know, to at the time find the balance that they must just find a certain number of people so that this system can finance itself. Are we not going to find ourselves in that situation?
Thank you, Chairperson. The point I would just like to be clarified on sharing experience. We are aware that this law was passed by this parliament and it must be implemented. But I just wanted to hear if next stakeholder, businesses and labor, on the point Honourable Member and I'm raising this from my union desk.
Talking about the operated driver issue?
The workers, yes, drivers are always on the road. And what you got is that tickets you pay, but now in terms on the contract systems, that the working conditions of the country. I'm saying I'm not forcing you to respond to the employers. I'm just saying what challenges were brought to, so that you can get a buy-in also from the employers.
Okay, let's hold on to that one. It's an important issue for the moment. But let's for a moment on the regulation issue. And we'll come to this one, it's an operator driver issue.
I'm saying a worker, a driver, that works from transport, is directly affected by representation also, because in between, it involves the ones who don't choose to. You understand the context of representation.
No, representation is you can make an appeal in a written form on a standard letter. It's not represented and you're represented by yourself, so you do. It's not that kind of thing. You make a representation to RCIA, if I understand correctly.
What I'm saying, I know it's a problem. You see, drivers, some drivers are not paid enough, even pretend that they can be able to pay for the tickets. Hence the issue of representation. I can't say it affects them directly, but I'll not later.
let's come to the whole dynamic as it kind of operates in the dark, because I think that's an interesting issue.
That's why I asked you to answer the presentation. What about people who are illiterate? They can see that okay, maybe I didn't make offense and all that. And traffic officers, most of them know them of corruption and all that. So they can probably, if you don't do them,
so you also mentioned downloading the form and coming to look up. Okay, so it's all around the practicality and fairness and potential unfairness of the representation.
I think the last point that they described there, literacy, we strongly believe that after the new system that we are going to do public awareness in 9 languages,
yes.
In 9 languages that we have done, so that people should know their rights in terms of action. And we strongly believe that it's just like another new system. Once the people know what are their rights in their own language, that you can achieve it now, people can get fines from that officer. And what they do, they walk into a prosecutor's office, that's in the table, they start paying away, and it's done. So we believe that it will go through the same process. The person, when it's fine, you will want to know if it's actually something, and you'll be given a form to show how to fill it, and then just bring this finger or sign it. So it's not...
And the representation would be able to be made in
the in language. What we're looking at for the...
So there's not that much, but if you want to raise a question, raise it. Okay.
Yeah. So I think the issue that was raised on representation, we did identify some risks. And we even got a consultant to some other risk assessments as well. That the issues in respect of people trying the system, trying to frustrate the system by doing representation and that. And that was identified when the act was conceived. And then there were checks analysis that they put in to say, if they want to frustrate the system and they don't, they must pay more. That's the one area that we said the agency and government should not be responsible for people who are irresponsible and try to frustrate government. They must pay. They must pay the price. So we build this into the risk assessment to say there are issues about this representation. The problem is that what is called? Backlog, that was said. We looked at that. Hence, one of the things that we did, Chairperson, one of the agendas that we were talking about, was remember that we came back to Parliament and said we had a risk of not getting enough retired legislators, because I think the representation officers, the registrar had some strict requirements, and then we removed them, because that was a risk that we identified to say we might not get those people. So now that opened it up, so that we can get more people in order to deal with this.
I think, Mr. Chairman, the very important question about if the preacher basically thinks that they're running short of money and then sort of manipulate the system to reject the representations. I think a possibility, but it depends on the integrity of people. And when a representation is made, it's done in writing. The findings of the representation officer is also in writing, and that transaction is auditable after the event, and quality checks will have to be done to avoid this thing from happening. So I have faith in the people working there that they will not manipulate the system to generate artificially more income to their trafficking creatures and so on.
And just to add to that, the representation officer will get paid whether he accepts or rejects the representation. That's correct.
No.
So there's nothing in it for him to continue the executive applications. It's the RTMC who has used to cover the costs of paying the business out of the RTIA. Well, the RTIA, yeah, what was it?
The RTIA.
So, there's not going to be any pressure from the RTIA on presentation officers to their discretion.
Is in with the municipalities at the moment. The whole issues is just to look at safety on the road. But we know municipalities have gone to an extent of budgeting income on traffic offenses. It is their major income line in their budget. So the question is, what will stop the agent? So we were just raising this issue at one stage. You know, people may be tempted to try to run their to get certain things to finance and take care of them.
The fact that these the process is a paper process, including decisions, means that, for instance, a committee like ourselves can assess the thing. So if we could sit, then it would be part of the note as well as we move. And perhaps beginning as soon as the project. It might be useful for us to in the public are coming up and saying that they're about treatment, or often we just take samples of representations and what the response is to those representations in order to get a sense. So I think, you know, we also need to be part of the safeguard of the system.
Before you close this matter on representation, I have just felt the need to clarify further process of representation that the moment the representation officer makes a decision, especially if the decision says that the representation has been declined, the lender still has the opportunity either to pay whatever the penalty was together with the fees, alternatively to take the route of the Criminal Procedure Act and go to court. So it still provides a room for the infringer to exercise some options, even notwithstanding the fact that the representation officer has made the decision. Thank you.
One question about major infringement in the presentation.
That's all you wanted on this matter? Okay, this is minor and major infringement.
Major infringement is in our presentation, it doesn't say you can make a representation. There's a question about that. I don't see if we can offer
it. Under our third approach is one.
Before I answer the question, I'd like to say that in terms of the Article 8, the minister is required to categorize certain road traffic risks to offences, minor infringements, and major infringements. And offences are those kind of acts whereby one has been found committing, then it leads straight to court. So if you have been found to be driving in excess of whatever alcohol in your body, then in that instance, that is a categorized offence, and you go straight to court in the criminal procedure system, take effect. And then we're looking at the minor infringements are those offences, or should I say, the acts that have been committed by the infringer, mostly which allow an infringer to be able to go for representation. And the major infringements, there are quite a few, as specified in the Schedule 3 officials in our regulations. And to make an example of a major infringement, it's an infringement whereby, for example, one is driving with a wrong license. In that no representation can be made, because how do you explain you're driving with the wrong license? So in the Schedule 2, we have about 5, if not 7, of those major representations that have been set. And those major representations have been taken from the National Road Traffic Act. And when the categorization of all these offences, professions, minor and major infringement was made, a consideration was given of the road safety aspects of the offence, value that the magistrate usually, the average magistrate actually usually place on such kind of penalties, the importance of the offences in relation to information that is required to ensure that the system is real, and some other factors. So that's how we came about those perpetration of those offences, and also the fact that all those offences have been categorized are taken directly from the National Road Traffic Offence Act, from the National Road Traffic Act. Thank you.
Yes, on this one, yeah.
Driving is from like to in here is after prophetic. You can have representation according to the thing. But to me, what driving at one is exceeding 150 and having a wrong license. Having a wrong license to me is a major problem.
Mm-hmm.
Infringement. Which problem are if you look into that,
so that we all understand that. You have page 8.
Page 8.
And you say drive with
the wrong license. Wrong
license. It's listed here as a major infringement.
But you can have people in that case, you can pay 1,500. While for my team exceeding 150, you don't have representation and
you go to court for that. Drive with wrong license. Is a major infringement, therefore you can't make a representation. My infringement, you can make a representation.
Mm-hmm.
But for not driving the wrong license, you can't make a representation.
Mm-hmm.
But if you don't go to court, well, you can go to court, but if you don't go to court, you can't. So there's three layers of
that. What I'm trying to say is that from reference,
yes.
It should, that person should just go to court, because that is very wrong. 1,500 is not a penalty enough. And you don't say anything about people who don't have licenses, who are driving and they don't have licenses. What category are they facing?
Just to say, we don't have a full schedule. In other words, this is just a
this is just an abstract.
And we should probably, actually, we need to inform ourselves, download the complete schedule from the regulation.
Okay.
But we understand why you...
It's older. And it's based on 2,000 offences of the National Road Traffic Act. Older.
Okay.
It's very, very...
Okay.
The question that was raised, I think I remember Masile, and I remember that there are gaps within the speed that we put. That's an example. Because all of them are...
It's
just the highlights
of my life. Okay, so let's not... You feel strongly that it should be an example of an amazing... Let's not get into that debate. Okay, because then we'll get into too much. Well, for the moment, we're just trying to understand the ball principle and get it with the... You seem to be aware of the potential risk. Yeah, that's all we're trying to do. Familiarize ourselves. There's some strong skeptics, and I'd like to ask one skeptic to talk. I'm not sure.
Yeah, sir, I don't need clarification. I think when we talk about wrong license, are we talking about a person having license EC and then driving an EV?
Yeah.
Are we talking about that?
In this country, then I'll say something of that. You are allowed to drive a class of a lower class with a higher class. You are not allowed to drive a higher class with a lower one. That's what we're talking about, a wrong license. When you are driving EC vehicle and you have only D, then we have a problem because you are not competent to drive.
Are we saying that there will never be any representation or explanation that the person for having, let's say, the old licenses, having a code 10 and the person is found driving a code 11 vehicle, the person can't make a presentation, can't explain why he found himself in that particular area of business. The person should be able to make a presentation if he has got serious reasons why
himself being there. Mm-hmm. All right, that's
you. We've been waiting for a long time.
We haven't quite completed
that. Just comment on it. We really recognize in some of the details in that gazette that we haven't seen.
Mm-hmm.
And if it is open for such a comment, at least the things that should be made by Mr. Jury, they should. I mean, it's a simple thing. I mean, that way, you know, if you have a problem with that,
that's right. Yeah. Okay.
There's a huge training process ahead of us, the red campaigns and everything, but the infringement notice will also be accompanied by a notice to set up the whole procedure to defend it of what his or her rights are and what the policy becomes. So I think right at the start in the pilot project and elsewhere in the country, traffic officers also in contact with the infringer should also take a little bit of time to explain that this is a new system, read the summit to know what your rights are. So I think this is how it will be managed. So we will definitely inform public the best we can on their rights and the procedures that they have to follow.
So just to make members comfortable, the implement notice itself. The best part of it is a whole lot of information. Whatever was said on the presentation is something that you say you have the right to do this, you have the right, it's there on the implement notice. You have to do that.
And the officers be trained, in the training manual for the officers, they would be trained to make sure that when they are giving out the infringement notice, they also alert the offenders of their rights as stipulated at the back of the notice.
One of the concerns that we've got is that with that huge list of infringements, people can argue whether, as you have, it's not enough. Other people argue it's too much. The concern we've got is that people, and I know that AA is traffic committee, for example, is already no difference in seeing that some of these things are too onerous on the notice. We can argue for years on this line. And my plea is that we implement it. As time goes by, if we find that they are too stringent, we will reduce. If we find that too not enough, we will increase. But let's start arguing.
Individual points on 40 minutes. We'll come back right towards the end to make that point together. But I think we're going to want to.
Thanks very much. I wanted to find out whether international is utilized here in respect to some of those situations of the presented outcomes here. I had experience in Australia recently where, for instance, over crucial periods like Easter and Christmas, they actually have doubled the very points for those for the purpose of, where high traffic volumes are impacting on deaths alone, so it does in our country, I mean, you can track it. One was able to put this additional sort of thing, and I just wanted to find out if that has been a consideration. I'm a bit concerned about the statement here that only 20% of traffic offenders pay fines. Now, I had a little opportunity before this was speaking to each other about some of my experiences in Kaoteng when I was dealing with somebody in the number plate industry. And the police statistics at Boxburg indicated that of all the traffic fines that they put on camera, they could only track 50% because of false numbers. Now we can do everything in the world, to try and get the system into place. If we can't get that right, I just wanted to know whether they've looked at the implications of that. The other thing which is of concern, one of our colleagues did raise a bit of it, is how are you going to impose the merit on fleet operators, in other words, that are operating big fleets of trucks of which the driver now, unbeknownst, is taking the thing with bad brake or, no lights. It's not really his direct fault. And I mean, that bloke who owns feet, would end up with a demerit, as you said, with a taxi within 1 hour possibly being eliminated. So I just wanted to know how you're going to deal with that. The one is high cost, and needless to say, which all have a bearing on this country. There's a convention here, I can get a traffic light, you forget it, you don't pay. And the same thing goes for foreigners that come in and out and what have you. So I'd just like to know what special arrangements have been done for that. Third question relates to this installer. I'm a little bit loathed, it's like having an HP on,
which it's a nice little convenience. I mean, what does it say to people? Surely there should be some limitation there. Say that, look, we will do it here to the thousand, but you know, anything under 500, for heaven's sake. Because the administration of that, you know, at municipal level in terms of the collection of it, is a nightmare. We've got a problem as it is. And I believe, you know, to try and do this for the sake of expediency is going to cause more problem and headaches than you can deserve. And, you know, the wealthy gets away, obviously, on the one hand. And, you know, I'm concerned about that. But the problem is with this, you know, this should effectively be interest charges, need to act as a deterrent. So if you've got to pay it off, then you're going to pay interest or something. I'm just worried about the nightmare of administration there. And that comes to the next point about the roles of municipalities in terms of their functioning here. I heard you say that you're going around and you've had some brochures, but are they entirely into cooperation agreements with you in respect of the discount? Because it comes to the other part, Mr. Sheila mentioned this, you know, municipalities budget for fines. They put in this thing saying there's going to be income coming into us every year or parking for this and the other. Now they've all of a sudden got a situation on their hand that if someone does keep it up within 30 days, they've got to pay 50% of that. So it could also do a lot of other things relating to what could happen. The last one, Chair, if I might just ask, is that the aspect of training, I think, is so key to this exercise of anybody accredited and informed. And these pocket computers, now, if I recall correctly, the agency that was doing the licensing card for DEMA were part of that to provide scanners. Now, those scanners, which were meant to be at one stage like 1,000 rand, ended up 11,000 rand, which was like 300 fold, purely because of the implication of reading those cards which had reduced fingerprints and everything else. Now, this thing is obviously going to be linked into the whole system in terms of finding out, first of all, that the license is valid, as to whether the person driving is in fact the person and the car relation. So I assume this is all going to be linked into e-notice. There's a whole lot of things that come to my mind immediately. The first thing, access to that system in terms of the security of the whole database. The compromise. The availability of those things in terms of having to have every office and every vehicle in the country with one of these things to do it. I mean, that's what finally lost. You know, I'm not talking about the fact that it is going to go in phases. But there's 2,200 officials that you talk about that are going to be made in service. And what happens if this gets lost or so? How do we stop the use of it? Is there something, I just want to know in my own mind that this really nothing. Know, like a weapon on a cop where they lose about 10 I'm worried about that. Yeah, Chair, let's see.
Okay. That's what you also... Somebody?
Yeah.
Sorry? Yeah.
Thank you, sir. Sir, I suppose that whatever we do here, it's all about this bigger picture to reduce the outages. In our country, of which I'm supposed to be one of the facts. My concern is a person with a minor infringement can end up having his or her property seized for a minor infringement. A person can hand it over to a cattle deal. That's one of the laws we made to try to get people off the cattle deal. Not just that, but they found themselves in. I think that one needs to be thought of serious. That's what I'm going to do. I don't want to see in October next year the chairperson of the committee believing that the 8th of October
Thank you, Chairperson. You know, Comrade Martin raised something very important. We are public representatives here, and I think if we don't represent public very well, is going to be problematic to us because this thing will be happening. I hear that you will be written and actually using a post office and people change addresses now and then. You find that you don't even find that thing, that punishment, this infringement, whatever. You don't find it. You find it at hotel. And all of a sudden, you have your movable address has actually taken away. Don't you think that is too far-fetched and all that? Looking at the fact that we have so many loopholes. When you were writing this regulation, you look into the our roles, how they are. You know, all those things. And taking a person to credit bureau is very serious. And taking your name advice is also very serious. It takes a lot of time, it takes a lot of money. It won't be, what is it, 500 grand anymore. It will be far more than that, you know. How can you, your furniture that you have earned for 15 years, how can it be taken for 500 grand? Didn't you have any other measures? I know that you are meaning well, but didn't you have any other measures that was a bit lenient to fix?
Okay. You see, when we're public representatives, which public are we representing? I think I only care about 15, probably 17 people were killed on the roads last year. That's tens of thousands of families who have lost breadwinners, kids, and all. Road accidents, road fatalities are the principal source of external transport and death for children between the ages of, I think, 4 and 8 or 9 or 10, something like that. What is the figure currently for serious injuries on that? So, yeah. We're the worst in the world. So I think that is the public. Whether we from the DA, the anchor, that is the public that we're responsible for primary. So we're not at the same time in that, and we've really got to do it. Really, really got to do it. And also the statistics show, and I think any or other data, the key, there's a hardcore people. We're not talking about a person who goes to a soft people. There's a hardcore of habitual offenders. So driving drunk, so getting caught time after time, they're driving 160 kilometers. And you pay the fine, and then it goes out the budget for it, and so on. Those are killers, and really got to deal. We've really, really got to deal with them seriously. It's a sickness in our society. That's the issue. Now, in dealing with it, obviously, we must make sure that there's fairness and justice and so on. And therefore, the questions we ask you are not the wrong questions. So we're sure that there won't be unintended consequences, unforeseen manipulation of the thing for whatever reason. So we need to ask those are very much. But I think in asking those questions, we mustn't slip over, nor assume that the person is not very literate or doesn't speak English and have, like we haven't, read the regulations. But they don't know that driving without a license is wrong. There's nobody in that country that doesn't know that. Okay. Or that driving 150 kilometers away, not stopping at a red. They know it. So it's not a so we mustn't be over-patronizing to the poor. There are there's a huge problems of poverty and modernization, and we shouldn't take very seriously. But we're not talking about that kind of thing. We're talking about dealing with hardcore criminals. We talk about road accidents, but they're not. They become accidental, But fundamentally, we're talking about acceptance by people. And that's really, I think, as a committee, we've got to support government when it's making it. And I'm sorry, I'm running region.
I'm
committed
to what I'm saying. I totally agree. But I'm saying we still have problems and challenges out there. The first one will be the how the house are, I forgot every the conditions of the house. But the other thing is what information I said in here. That is fine, right.
Okay, let's come to that one. Okay. The whole driver operation.
I was basing my thing on what you were talking about. Of the people who are lying on the floor for a living. I'm not basing on people who are drinking and driving. Those people are dependent.
I'm not basing. Okay, no, I'm sure that's the case. I'm just saying. Okay, now, maybe that's where we can start. It's one of the hanging issues. Let's just talk out the responsibility and who gets the demerits and so on when we're dealing with operators who are not necessarily maintaining their key and the actual driver. So can we have a
clarification? Sir President, we'll deal with that. My colleagues will deal with that. It's too technical, but they can do it easy for you to understand.
Okay.
The principle is that the driver will be responsible for driver offenses. That's the principle. If you go over a red robot, it's you as a driver. If you overweight, if you exceed the speed limit, those are driver offenses. If the vehicle is stopped, the light is not working, the brakes are not working, then it's a vehicle, its operator is responsible for that. If it's a vehicle that has got an operator card, it's the operator, the owner of the vehicle.
Very common. It's a little bit. Yeah.
That's the principle, check that. Drivers will not be responsible for something that is not there. For the operator, the operator will have good merit points against his name or the company's name, and then the voucher card of that company can be withdrawn. If he has, another member asked if they have too many vehicles, there's a formula that is used to multiply. Because he said if you have one vehicle, from 1 to 25, 1 to 20.
Okay.
Yeah, there it is.
Sometimes it's been logically. It's a complicated area.
Yeah,
but let's just get a sense of the principle.
Yeah.
Okay. So take us through a couple of examples. If you've got 120 vehicles.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. If one looks at it, in terms of the proposal that has been published, even between 150 motor vehicles, this is the total number of points that you would have as an operator. And this is between 21 and
40. Just stop there.
Right.
So, makes no difference if you've got one or 20. If you've got one vehicle, you can...
Okay, as an operator.
If you are registered as an
operator and you're running at one vehicle,
yeah,
you can accumulate 250 merit points before you lose your car.
That is correct.
Is that the maximum?
That is the maximum.
If you've only got one vehicle, you get 12 points.
Yes, you have.
If you have
the basis, yes, the one up to 20 vehicles, that's the maximum 240. It is all the case that we want to be able to have a justiciable system. Remember, as an individual, you have a maximum of 12.
Yeah.
In this, you would also have a maximum of 12. Mm-hmm. However, the more vehicles that one has, it comes out automatically to and will reduce a little bit by the number of motor vehicles, such that ultimately, the greater the number of vehicles, one would end up having a maximum of 6 points per vehicle.
Right.
In terms of being registered as an operator. The critical difference is, for an individual, it is the driving license that gets suspended for that of 3 months, for every point that you over the threshold. However, operators, upon reaching that threshold, whichever one is applicable, that will result in the actual suspension of all the operator cards.
All the vehicles.
Of all the vehicles, for a period of 1 month. And the basic underlying motivation here is replacing the onus of upon operator for them to be able to take care of their own business.
Mm-hmm.
And at any given point, it is important that they are not going to be left in the dark. They always know the status of the demerit point. If I may just take advantage of this, exactly the same way we're making provision on the system that upon reaching a specific threshold, say for example, once you get to the quarter from a period that an individual has accumulated 9 demerit points, that we make provision, the system would automatically remind and start being reminded to say, be careful, you are now sitting very close to the threshold. The very same thing, every the operator would know upon reaching that there will always be communication that comes and says, hey, remember, you've got to be careful, take care of your own business, all the drivers in respect of the motor vehicles.
Okay, is that clear to members? Mm-hmm. And is very progressive and correct, and that it gets tough as you've got a larger
absolutely,
as it should be. So
that also says, of all the high pressures, what they call them, higher companies, like Avis and
Avis. Mm-hmm. If I may mention also, Mr. Chairman, my apologies.
Yeah.
If I may mention, we have also been engaging them. We would also see in the progress report that we submitted. We've had meetings with the operators, and we're engaging with them so that they can be able to know. This would have implications upon the business. It is incumbent upon them to be able to change their operational plans and procedures and ensure that they are in a position to be able to comply with the law.
We have identified that problem. It is embassy. Saboa is a good organization. They know these things. The safety is a problem. We did go to Santaco and case Santaco. And one of the for this month was to do that in the region of Tron, to study in the region of Tron, to have workshops, presentations to the structure in Santaco. We have through Jeff, we have received the MLX, we have received the other organization, what is it, NCA, to say we need to meet and discuss these issues. Chairperson, that came out of what the other members were raising. When we were doing some risk, we identified that at some point we might not have taxis in this country running, we might not have drivers. And that's one of the reasons we identify that we should come to the portfolio committee, indicate the portfolio committee how the system is going to work, and the portfolio must understand, because we are going to have a whole load of pressure from the communities, from the public, to say this system is flawed, this system is unfair, and all those types of issues, they will actually come. And we are saying, person, we are doing this because we have people lying out there. We are not going to look at individual cases and try to the people should suffer on the ground. We are going to implement this thing so that people might realize that government is doing something to save their lives. That's the one area. Whether it's going to affect truckers, whether it's going to affect the taxi, it's a lesson that people must learn. When government says you shall go to for 10 years for raping a kid, it was too harsh at some point, but we knew the consequences that were there. This is the same principle that we want to apply, that we have tried over the years through many systems, through enforcement, through fines, through taking people to court, it doesn't work. If we don't implement the system, then we are doing nothing.
Okay. Let's just on the sort of the same thing, but just while we're dealing with this thing and the taxis. They don't have operating costs. I mean, they haven't set a certain limit there.
No, they
do.
It was taken away from taxis and buses. It was operating, it was applicable to all the what it used to call RT2S vehicles. But from 2020 it was taken off, and now it's only the holidays and fire trucks.
Okay.
So we need to look at that. I think it's an issue that might have not looked at. But I think we must put them within the principles, because there are those who own 300 taxis or so. I think we need to look at that.
I think we do.
Because
it's the big nightmare.
I just wanted to make a follow up on that. Whether this, the Dutch principle of insurance and demerits when an operator is reporting, which applies to that. And also, my previous question, of course, is the limit of insurance and demerits and system.
They just have the zero quick, the zero quick.
Yeah.
But it's just, sorry, quickly, and I think it's very important, the whole tax scheme, and that, because, and that's also where we've got very serious problems in terms of cost. And they're sometimes driver problems, but very often operator problems. A lot of the problems. And therefore the architecture of this and the notion of the operating hubs doesn't apply either in buses or taxis. It's something we obviously need to think about. I mean, so because I mean the shortcut would be it's treatable as a vehicle. And operators in some sort of operate buses and not more designers. It's not ideal, this is a better system. But unless one has operated cars, you can't apply the buses and so on.
Although, Mr. Chairman, they also need permission to operate.
Right. So that's permission.
What is the logic? If you link it to that system, then you can stop it from operating easily. So is that system also in place? But I agree that the operated car system was taken away.
But what form do they have
operators? They apply for suppliers
as an association or
as an individual? As the owner of a bus or buses or an owner of taxi or taxis. He's a business
application. Hutco would like such an application, for instance, as would an individual in project.
Yeah.
But not for data.
Not for data, but also if one person owns five taxis, that person, or it's a business person, that person applies for to operate in a specific area or on a specific route.
Yeah.
So there is perhaps vehicles out there that you can use to then also study that. But Mr. Chairman, I just want to make a remark. I think in 80% of all the cases, the operator is actually responsible because the operator says, I want this road to be in Lanesburg by yesterday. You know? If the vehicle is not roadworthy, the owner of the vehicle must take care of the vehicle. He must make sure that everything is working perfectly. So, in many instances, in the Road Traffic Act, it was the intention the operator takes full responsibility for all his drivers and his drivers' behavior. So, if a person is not following the rules, he must say to the fact that person is trained or whatever it comes to that, and he mustn't put pressure on it. So, I think in many instances, the operator got away with murder. And the drivers in many instances because of the pressures that has been put upon them to do certain things or otherwise they will lose their jobs. So therefore the ARPA system is focusing on the operator, and I think what was said is if we implement this and we test it, we will fine tune it, make sure that the balance is right. The balance of punishment to the operator and the balance of punishment to the driver. So that we find the willingness to also make sure that people are not out of jobs. I rather would like to punish the operator, but that's a side issue. I think the main issue is you don't know exactly how the public will react, how operators will react, and we will only find out by implementing the system and paying constant attention to the points that may show up where there's no concern and analyze it properly, adjust the system.
I think this is then the right time. This is what I've been raising myself. That the shortcut and the easiest way, why I raised the nation, that when you have presented or are suggesting that to present to Netflix, employer boarding, stay, workers, duty transport, London is there, they issue instructions specifically. Workers are given an instruction, whether it's a taxi or it's a truck, that to do this. And once exactly some lose their jobs. So for that reason that I was going to ask the question, I was suggesting that it would be best to test it with Netflix just as a point of briefing them and then getting their views, but re-emphasize exactly what how do we get from the only
other? It's interesting that the nature of that, yeah. And with or without neglect, obviously also the chance of these things are very important. Because often what will look like a dry air, and literally is a dry area in the most methane is, but of course I've been driving for 16 hours in front of Nathan or Sam. But who's ultimately responsible for the fact that you were saying the pressure may place on a driver or whatever?
Obviously there's a lot of negotiations with a lot of road players, and this regulations have changed a few times and all sorts of things happen. Like for example, the bidding days, why do we have the bidding days? Because we receive reputations that there must be at least one pay day before the fines. This whole story about payment in installment, you know, this attachment of property if a person doesn't respond. You know, there's a whole process, and that person doesn't respond, and then it ultimately leads to attachment of property. The individual is also given the opportunity to pay in installments. So the person must just react and get back to the commission, make arrangements for the payment of installment. I know it's administratively a nightmare, but this is to try and also to accommodate people after we've received representation. So I think anything that's been done to accommodate everybody as far as possible, but we must not dilute the system in the end. It's no longer effective system to punish offenders. I think that we must do, and hopefully that will be safer conditions on our road.
So we've got a couple of methods. Can we just run through the number plates?
So the ones that I see here, there was the one on why it can be only 10 years of fine. And so as we indicated, FNDD has developed this interface of paying fines and seeing paying fines. They've developed it long time ago, and they have the task where municipalities that they operate. Trano was one of them. And when we started the project to identify funds, they also indicated that this is on the cards. And hence we said, because it's fair in Trano, we will use it in this effect. We even have an agreement with FND that we signed with them in terms of the approaches. The agreement is very clear that whichever bank comes and develops whatever system, we will accommodate. All we want is the people to have access. We have negotiated with EasyPay. We are negotiating with everybody where people can pay. We are not loading anybody outside. FND, we are told that they were there and they had the system ready when we came up with this issue. So the question of taxi drivers, we have discussed that, network is, I think, we can
just add one thing. I think the presentation has also made clear that if this taxi is, for example, speeding stop, and there is a problem with the driving license, a problem with the vehicle, etc., the data deemed points will be coupled to the most severe offence, but not each and every individual offence committed at the same time. So if it's a question that this vehicle is not worthy and that's 3 points, but maybe it was slightly exceed the speed limit, the traffic officer will be fined for everything, but he will only attract points for his roadworthiness, that the vehicle is not roadworthiness. So it will not be possible in a single event that the person will accumulate demerit points and he will lose his license or whatever the case might be. So that is not how the system was developed.
Just on that one, presumably demerit points in a single event can be attached both to the operator and to the driver. So the second thing applies, both to the one and to the other.
So the main point that we're talking about, I think Honorable Masiga was asking if he's going to get minus 1,000. unfortunately not. What you are saying is you are supposed to be behaving good in any event. If you don't do good, we punish you. But if you do good, that's what you should be doing. So we can't give you one much for that. Okay.
The north is right.
Yeah, no, no. Maybe when we just said, you know, good to have the role.
Okay. So, number place issues. On number place, so we have identified to get the risk as well.
Can I
So you tell. Then with regards to the number plate issue, we have already done the amendments to the road traffic regulations, wherein we prescribe the permanent fixing of number plates, which would then make it difficult for anyone then to can legally remove or operate a motor vehicle without a registration.
Let's see how fast it goes. Obviously, ongoing.
Yeah.
Many things
in the method. Yeah, so we try everything in the book.
Yeah, and
that's where we have started. However, the other project that we're into that has been now is being used for issues that we didn't even intend to is a system called number plate recognition system. We started the project. I think I was in this committee where I indicated we are going to buy those machines and have a pilot. And we got the project, and then it was very successful. Jovet magazine that it works, and they got their other systems, and are appointing on people for unpaid fines. Okay, the intention was we want to see if this system works, so that we can identify those vehicles that are not properly registered, without number plate, those who are owing us license fees. That was the message. The intention wasn't only on outstanding fines. And putting it back, it's being used for something else. That system we have to progress, and that's one of the things that we want to roll out so that we can go away with those vehicles that having number plates that do not belong here. Because those systems are actually mounted on a vehicle like patrolling. And it gives you information right away. Once it recognizes the character, it comes to the computer and says, that vehicle, there's something wrong. Okay.
Not the chip.
It recognizes the number recognition. It says MN842GP, and then it comes into the system and it says license and page.
Or it should be a white
jetter. Or it says white jetter, yeah.
And
it's
not.
Yeah.
At this stage, it reads an undertaking from into the major system and gives information on that vehicle. Such as this kind of thing. Even the intentions and the project which we are currently pursuing, which we hope will in a year or two's time, have electronic license discs with the chip. They can be read electronically, so that's a separate project, it's nothing good.
Okay. So we acknowledge the installment as Mr. Fandona indicated, where we simply went into that to try to accommodate the poor. Who will be naughty on our roads. They shouldn't be naughty. They should still pay. We simply wanted to accommodate them. However, we understand that there might be problems. We have to look into that serious issues of people paying 50 rand instead of 50 rand. And the equity, if you said, I'll pay installments 100 rand a month, 1,000 rand, and then 1 month goes by, you don't pay, or you pay 50 rand, then your right for installment lapses immediately if you pay the full amount within 7 days. So that it was built in to guard against those issues. The fines, municipalities, there was an issue on fines for municipalities. So we believe that this system will actually ask people to pay because at the end they'll be paying more if they pay and then lose property. So we believe that the municipalities will actually get more money than they are getting now. That's our belief. And they shouldn't be mourning about the percentage that will be taking. That's our belief. Second is what we did. We must bring to the attention of this committee is that when you look at the steps that we put into the regulations, over the years I was involved in negotiations with justice. And Mr. Van Donner, while he was still my boss, he was hammering on me to get an agreement with Justice and the Magistrate Commission so that they can agree on salaries. and that did not happen. Nothing can got nothing out of justice. They were saying we're independent at all. We took a route check because traffic fines are only our issues. And in this regulation, we standardize fines. And if this regulation, Portfolio Committee is going to support that, the public is going to support that, we're going to take it through to the Minister and the Minister of Health. And then once they are signed, it means in this country, fines will be standardized. That's what we do. Okay. Scanners, I think Honorable Farrow asked about the scanners and the e-force. The scanners that were bought, which we call CDG, they had problems. And those scanners are still there. Most of them have been returned to DOC. Some of them are in our stores at RPMC. And we did in the specification for this one, we accommodated those scanners so that they can be changed to make them work rather than just throw them away. So we have accommodated those scanners, and then we are saying for the new ones, we are looking at, we are not looking at the same type of scanners. What we are looking at is what on HD, this, the PDA, we are looking at those. We did our research, I found that compared to the CDG, which was almost 11,000 per week, that particular student is actually 2,400, 3,000 per week. So we had identified that, and we had presentation from five companies in terms of those. And we are actually targeted those to have multi-functionality. One of the things that they'll be doing is we will have a charge sheet, what we call charge sheet, in this thing, so that when an officer stops you and say you are not wearing your scanner, you shouldn't be writing, and then if handwriting is legible, and then the case is out, those issues. We are saying this time around, you press A1, you know A1 must be not wearing a safety belt, and then you put your name, and then it can print. He doesn't have to put amount because the amount is there itself, and then it will print from his computer and he must be. And that area, Chair, you remember I was here in this committee when I was asked what 30 rand. The 30 rand goes into that area. Accessibility and security, we have looked at the standard security issues in the area of wireless computers and so forth, and we made sure that we don't have problems in that respect. As we speak, we in a digital, we can, I can sit here and connect to this via H3G. That can be done as long as you have the pathways, and you can do it. So we have that as well with this particular one to build those security measures. And we will actually see where each unit is at any given point, because it's done in GPRS. So we will know where each unit is. If a unit is lost, then we simply lock the unit, for example. So there was a question on addresses. I'm not going to get into the other one of management and addressing the
outcome.
Yeah. The one on the of addresses. Chair, as we are sitting here, we believe that the whole range of people who are not paying their fines, who are not changing or renewing their driving license, their vehicle licenses, it's because they are not actually changing their address with their office. The road traffic act is clear. If you change your residence, your address, within 20 days, you must inform the authorities of the change of address in the law. If you are not doing it, then there's a problem. You might have to change the law. One of the things that we have done on the system is that in terms of ARTO, if you did not renew your car license, after 21 days, you will be sent an infringement notice, because that's an infringement. Without anyone stopping you, you will receive it to say you did not renew unless I'm doing so. But I saw this car a long time ago. You've got a problem because in terms of law, you must still come and notify us that you have changed your ownership. So we have built all those safety in terms of the project. It was finished a long time ago. All we are doing, we are implementing what they say and then putting it into action.
Okay, thanks very much. Let's see one other time. I think part of the best issue that people tend to, obviously a lot of it because it's quite an administrative process now, and therefore a paper process, quite a lot of it, and therefore there are going to be problems with post office deliveries, people not having easy identifiable addresses. There's going to be a lot of chat, and I would imagine some of the representations that we're going to be receiving, legitimate or otherwise, taking a charge, are going to be that I never got them. And they may well be legitimate. If you're living in New Crossroads or somewhere like that, post office delivery.
Yes. Yes. May I say something? We have seen the notice system on the address. And it's remarkable that the people in maybe more informal segments, they collect their post. They've got a system sorted out there where it goes to long central point that they collect it. And we were actually surprised by the success rate of delivery of we've done it as a test. So what I'm saying is the post office is sort of always blamed, but it's very seldom that a post is lost in the system. This is what we've discovered, this experiment that we've done.
And how many, I think we've sent out something like 50,000 postal
these places all over the country.
On a monthly basis, we send, I think in Gauteng only 50,000. Nationally on a monthly basis, it's 187,000 monthly notices that we send for the new one. And we so they've got a system where they can check if they're not responsible. They check it and then they check and then they come back to us to say 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 addresses are wrong. This is not what should be. So we have struck an energy with processes where we test number things before our show comes.
Also, they can register, so we will know that that's it.
Yeah, we don't know about the
origin. So we will know.
Sir, maybe just to raise that, I think that particular aspect is a debatable one. Because, in telecom development areas where people have been using postal addresses of local shops, and when you go to those shops, cut boxes of letters are in there. And also, I think if you talk to them, they'll tell you about the challenges they are having. This also is on the back of Alzheimer's, of ID. And there's something that is being used.
Okay. Okay. I think that's the first one on the hospital committee. Thanks to our colleagues from OSCE. I'm personally, I'm personally very excited that I think we're starting to see. I think we're close enough to where we've been. I think that last year we were saying that we're going to have a strong thing in February of this year. But it's very complicated, and I think it'll help us understand the things that we need better, the complexity of this. And there will be teething problems. And therefore, I think as you talked about, and we'll probably see a media campaign, could well be a bit of a media campaign, a bit like the e-mail issue, where there were some real problems. But I think, as you were saying, let's move ahead. I think it's very important. And bear in mind that it will be a part of the room. So it's cost and so on, you know, that one, but we really got to get across it. But I think it gives us quite a lot of work that's going to be very interesting as it kicks in the few months to from outside also excellent oversight, support, but critical for it, it needs to be critical. That was a new service. I think they just say to move fast, and finally, thanks very much. Thanks for that, for your enthusiasm. Okay. Thank you.